and cue the intro music. It's very cheesy. And there's the crowd. And hello and welcome to Pedagogzilla, the pedagogic podcast with the Pop Culture Core, coming at you live from the Playful Learning Conference 2023. I am your host, as ever, Mike Collins, senior learning designer at the Open University, a man with a microphone and imposter syndrome incarnate. And I am joined across the table just after breakfast by...
Jim Thompson.
Jim, hello. Jim, where are you from? What's bringing you to Playful Learning?
I'm from the University of Central Lancashire up in Preston, and I'm a bit of an addict to Playful Learning. My day job is to teach games design to students, which runs across all kinds of digital and non-digital games.
I mean, I did your games design, well, your finding a game design to match your pedagogic intent session. It had a better name. It was Frameworks?
Yes, it's a Playful Learning tour guide at the moment. We're still sort of knocking names around, but there's that idea of kind of unifying pedagogy and hurtigogy, which academics should understand, and game mechanics and game structures, and sort of whether you'd use it yourself to sort of guide your own development, or whether perhaps you're a facilitator in an institution and you'd use that as a framework to work with colleagues. So it's a bit of a bootstrap, get yourself into games quickly.
And it really is. It's get yourself into games and have them meaningfully actually guide, you know, games for learning, which is such a tricky thing, as we found many, many, many times. Anytime an educator tries to make a game, they instantly try and add in all of the replicable mechanics from the real world and end up with this bloated homunculus mess slithering around on the table. Whereas the framework that you showed us is an absolute genius. Walk us through the process?
Yes. Yeah, so I must give a shout out here to Emma Glasper as well as my colleague in this. And so we've come from different sides. I'm a game designer. Emma's a kind of learning coordinator. And we've been in quite a few situations at our home institution where we've worked with colleagues. And sometimes it's a bit difficult to lift them away from Monopoly and Cluedo and all those kind of very familiar games, because in one respect, they're not very suitable for sort of some of the things we aspire to do as kind of teaching. So the idea then was to sort of, how do we, you know, taking the assumption that academics would have some knowledge of their teaching and their teaching process, then how do we very quickly sort of link them to these ideas of good games? So ideas of replayability, ideas of interest kind of thing. And as you just alluded to yourself, there's a tendency to make quite dry, boring games. So you kind of, you know, if you're going to make an educational game, let's make it fun as well. You know, let's make the students want to play it and perhaps play it again as well. So that's that. So as you go through the process, generally, we get our colleagues to sort of think about what their aspirations are. Usually we have to tie them down a bit, you know, say don't throw the kitchen sink at it, sort of kind of come back down a little bit, just think of one or two outcomes. And then we slowly then introduce them those links then between some sort of learning behaviours and learning outcomes to what might work in games. So in terms of game mechanics, where you sort of acting or looking at territory or negotiation kind of thing. And then we further link to some existing board games, of which, you know, people who play games, board games in the modern world kind of know there's a whole plethora of quite decent games, you know, which you can either access, you know, either go and buy it, or you can find out about it on the web kind of thing. So hopefully at the end of it, then having gone through this kind of process, an academic not only might have focused on an area they want to sort of work through, which might be challenging for them, so they want to freshen it up, and made those first steps in making an interesting game then. So then they would follow on. So they would kind of feel confident in prototyping something and trying it out. So so far, so good. We did it once in our home institution. We've just done it at Playful Learning. It seems to get some good reception. We're looking for sort of feedback now. So our intention is to sort of keep sharing this and get people to use it and start help us kind of polish it as a kind of tool, really.
I mean, and it is just, it's a really fabulous tool. I came into that session wiped out. Like, I think I got about 5-10 minutes into it, and then my brain just hit capacity because it had been quite a long day at that point. And then started going through the process and the handout, and it was like, oh, sparks, this is really... There's this wonderful kind of matrix on the inside. Matrix probably isn't even the right word, but that essentially helps you match learning outcomes or graduate outcomes with different types of game, which allows you to then match that to game mechanics. Which, and I think game mechanics is so often where games in education fall down. And this not only links you to game mechanics, but then points you at specific examples of those games. So you can go, hey, you can't, I mean, as Chris Morrison said in the session, you can't copyright a mechanic. It's we've had it from the horse's mouth, from the copyright literacy expert now. Because, you know, you don't need to reinvent the horse in that respect. What you're trying to do, of course, is to convey your learning outcomes. And it was, yeah, it got us thinking in very different ways and actually forced us to go down the road of, oh, what we're trying to teach in this one game is actually bigger than a single game. It sort of focuses you down to the specific thing that a particular game can support and enable.
Yeah, and that's kind of, you know, sometimes you almost need the outside agency to focus you a little bit as well on what are you trying to achieve.
Oh, sorry, can I trouble you to get a tiddly bit closer or pull the mic closer?
Sorry, yes. Just to focus on what you're working on. And, you know, that kind of outside voice as well, as I just said, you know, don't throw the kitchen sink at it. You know, if you just want students to achieve one thing, learn one thing, get used to working with some information, then focus on that and that's enough. And then there's ideas, as we know, in sort of game design, where you might think, well, there might be an expansion pack for this game, which you might make it more sophisticated. Or it might be a series of games which take people through step by step. So I think in one respect, we're kind of pushing an open door. People are kind of becoming more accustomed to this. There are different ways of delivery. So hopefully what we will achieve is to support people in kind of finding it. That's so far so good.
So that's how you can make really good teaching. But we've got an interview format here as well about the Danish phenomenon of pishardling undervisning or piss poor teaching. And I've definitely butchered the Danish for that. I apologise to all of our Danish listeners.
I'm not even going to attempt it.
do you want to try it? I'm not even sure what the little mini umlaut thing. Try that, top of that.
I think my man Cuny would just massacre that to piss darling. Underfinishing. Yeah.
To be fair, it sounds better, more convincing than mine. See, what we should have done is written this out phonetically on our notes, but we didn't.
No.
So we are asking people about their fabulous failures and where to find them, but also about examples of fabulous fuck-ups they found in the wild. And the examples of piss-poor teaching that we're asking people for, what we're hoping to do, of course, is not just to pin it to the wall, laugh at it and go, ha-ha, bad teaching, but instead to pull out from it what good teaching might look like and what we can learn from the examples of piss-poor teaching we find in the wild. So what is your example of piss-poor teaching?
So my main teaching activity is in a design background. So quite typically we would give a student a project, a theme, a subject, which we know has some kind of, by going through that project, they will work something out for themselves. And get them to design something. So, and in sort of early years of education, you might do small projects, very focused design. And in my current role, designing games or designing levels. But then moving on, you start to get the projects become bigger and larger. But sometimes the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and the poor outcome, although you think it's a nice thing at the time, is like say to a student, well, you can do what you want, design whatever you like, thinking that you're freeing them from any constraint. Now you've taken the stabilizers off they go. But what happens 9 times out of 10 is the student just sits there like a rabbit caught in the headlights because you've given them no boundaries. There's no structure, no framework, and it's a bit too soon for that kind of thing. So any time a colleague sort of says, oh, well, we'll just let the students do what we like, I kind of fly across the table. No. that's it. So that's a bad example. And I think, as an educator, you've always got to keep in your mind your sort of guiding sort of somebody's aspirations through this kind of network of skills, which sometimes you take for granted a bit as well. And that just becomes from experience. So, you know, don't do it, folks. Don't say you can do what you like. Always put some kind of theme in there or a structure or kind of some kind of aim, because then that allow, although you want to encourage that kind of free and lateral thinking, there's still a kind of end point which you're going to kind of thing.
I wish Rebecca was at the table. So Rebecca's introduced me to problem-based learning as a framework. And I think this is one of the things that she said in it, is that it's about having a very clear outcome and almost not quite a set path, but for there to be sort of ways to get to the end instruction. Then of course, the concept of sort of liberating structures. It's sort of, it's terrifying to be sort of surrounded. You don't know which direction to go in when it's all open territory around you from a creative or kind of academic perspective. And actually it helps to sort of narrow your thinking a little bit to work out what is within kind of current reach.
Yes, exactly. You use that phrase, open territory, and then what we do in open territory, we get lost, you know. So we, an analogy I sometimes use when working with my postgraduate students is kind of, really, I'm your shepherd, you know, I'll let you wander and all the rest of it, but I'll make sure you don't fall off the cliff. You know, and that kind of analogy of kind of, I'm going to encourage your structured research and give you pointers. I'm going to let you wander fairly freely, but it's still my role in that as an educator in that respect to sort of stand and say, no, don't go there. This way lies madness. This way is dangerous, kind of thing. So yeah. As an example in my own practice, as you know, we sort of get our students to work in the game design industry and a whole role of things. So in some of our final year projects, which again, you'd think by then that they're quite open, but we still might tack on something like an industry kind of requirement or we might even use an industry-based brief to sort of bring them back to reality, to sort of contextualise all your learning, which has happened in that lovely, safe academic environment. Now you're just on the cusp of doing it in the real world where there will be some kind of restriction and structure you've got to meet.
And it makes it more authentic and it gives them, you know, transferable experience, so it's less of a horrible shock later on when...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you kind of, without being nasty out, you know, this is the real world now, you know, and it's not always as lovely and happy as it used to be in the first year of your studies when you could get away with murder, kind of.
So what would be your top tip then for educators looking to use problem-based or project-based learning?
I think there's a little bit of work you do yourself in... finding, as I use that phrase, real world or just research, you find the themes that you know are important, and if you can find them and then sort of format them in a way, so you're essentially giving a boundary to that kind of problem, which you know the student's going to bump up against, but you also know in bumping up against that problem, they will use their skills, their knowledge and their experience to sort of work it through, and that will be a valuable experience. So it's that early setting and framing again, you know, as I just said, don't say you can do what you like. Actually say, here's a restriction, you know, here's a problem or here's a goal, you know, and then, you know, in yourself, then just keep changing them, keep finding new ones. That is then, you know, keep reading yourself, keep talking to your sort of colleagues in industry and all the rest of it, and keep finding out different sorts of things. So a few years back when VR raised its ugly head again and everybody was like, everything's going to be VR. And now here we are now in 2023. It's not. In fact, you know, it's going the other way.
Hey, Mark Zuckerberg's almost got legs now.
Yeah. you know, it's kind of, well, that augmented reality environment exists and there are interesting things to do with it, but it's not the be all and end all. There are still other things, you know, and, you know, so you know, it's incumbent on myself, sort of game educators, to sort of be aware of those kind of things and just keep, again, shepherd-like, keep the student on the track.
Free them with fencing and check where the fencing is regularly.
Yeah. It's a benign dictatorship.
Well, that's a great thought to end on. Thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you online, and is there anything you'd like to plug?
Just put me right on the spot there, so you'll have to sort of put a link in somewhere. For my email address is jrthompson1@uclan.ac.uk. You can usually find me through the Playful Learning kind of network anyway, and if you're interested in perhaps getting to use our Playful Tour Guide framework, come and find us, and we'll furnish you with a copy and some guides and set you loose with some guidelines.
And there'll be a link to that in the show notes. Thanks very much for joining us. I will now play us out with the last bit of the cheesy intro.
Lovely.
And the crowd applauding. They had a lovely time. You can find us online at pedagodzilla.com and also on Twitter at pedagodzilla. This is Mike signing off at Playful Learning Conference once more. Bye-bye now.